Committee will come to order. It's April 4th, 2011, 8:05, and Secretary, please call roll.
Here.
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative Stevens.
Here.
Representative Feigl.
Here.
Chair Gibbs.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And again, let's turn off our cell phones. And this morning we have Carol Como, who's probably when I after I was elected, before I was sworn in, I knew I had to get my ducks in a row, and the first place I went was down to the Anchorage School District and try to get some wisdom from Carol. So I'm glad she's online. Carol, are you here?
I am. Thank you. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Sheila has us, not that we don't know where Anchorage is, but she has you on Google Earth, and she's zooming in on Anchorage. And we're ready to start the presentation, Carol.
Well, thank you very much, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to share with the committee about the Anchorage School District. I know most of you have probably been to Anchorage many times. But we are large. We're the 94th largest district in the United States. Over 6,000 employees and more than 100 schools and programs that are part of our school district program. We have 7.7 million square feet of facilities to maintain, and over 300 miles are driven annually by our bus drivers. So even though we're big, we're absolutely committed to every single student we have. Next slide, please. Our students population on September 30th, which is our official date, is 49,091 students. One of the things we're noticing is one in three are from low-income families, and the poverty rate seems to be growing every year. We have many, many languages spoken by our students, 91 at last count, and 14% of our students receive special education services. One of the other things that we've noticed is that our military student population is growing, and we're expecting another 1,000 students from military families to join the Anchorage School District in the next few years. Next slide, please. Along with our languages, of course, comes the diversity, which you can see portrayed on this pie chart. We believe it's a strength because we think it prepares our students to be successful in a global environment. But it also has brought with it many challenges as the district has changed very rapidly. We've had to adapt and offer many new programs and support services that we were not providing about 10 years ago. 30 years ago, 13% of the population was ethnically diverse, and today 53% represent ethnic groups other than white or Caucasian. Our fastest growing group, as you can see from this pie chart, is the 13% multi-ethnic, and that came about a few years ago when we were required to have everyone re-enroll and redesignate their racial and ethnic categories. Next slide, please. I want to focus just a bit on, we're really proud that our graduation rate has increased, but we've got a very long way to go, as you can see by this graph. We are hovering right around 69.69, or close to 70% the last 2 years. And we are finding that many of our students are staying in school the fifth or sixth year, and we think that's good. We are trying very hard for our students to stay in school. So even though it might look bad on our graduation rate, we think the most important thing is that our students stay in school and get the high school diploma. Our dropout rate for last year's calculation was less than 4%, and you can see from the graph that that has diminished radically for the last few years. We're still working on that, though we had a slight uptick last year also. Our students' SAT and ACT scores are highest in the state, and they outperform the national averages. So as more and more students are taking these tests, they're performing well. Next slide, please. One of the things that I know the legislature's been focusing on, and we certainly have been supporting, is the whole effort to pre-K and elementary. We have 60 elementary schools in the Anchorage School District, plus a number of charter schools. But most importantly, I think I'd like to focus for a few minutes on our preschool programs. We have six preschool programs that are funded through our Title I funding. The Alaska Native Cultural Charter School, Fairview Elementary, North Star, Russia Jack, William Tyson, and Willowa. And we did receive two of the preschool pilot programs, and we're hoping that those will be refunded, reinstated in the final outcome, because at Creekside Park and Willow Crest, we've seen great gains. Then we also are partnering with Gladys Wood and Head Start for another one of our preschools. That plus the migrant education preschool program at Denali Elementary are showing us many different models that we're able to assist these young students coming in. We're measuring them with our DIBELS assessment. We're seeing better prepared kindergartners according to the kindergarten teachers and the developmental profile in these schools. Other assessments that we're giving and analyzing as we look at this pilot are the Peabody vocabulary test, other screenings that with our consistent pre-K curriculum. The other thing that we're working really hard on with our elementary schools is response to instruction, or RTI. What we're doing is really analyzing all of our students' progress, and we're hopefully using the core curriculum at the base for the vast majority of our students. And then as we progress monitor or really review the data that's coming in, if we see students needing interventions, then we're able to intervene more frequently. We've done extensive training for next year and expect that we will have a much more sophisticated universal screening and progress monitoring tool in place in the area of reading next year. The following year will be followed by mathematics, trying to really intervene early and more frequently so that we don't wait until the end of year assessments in order to increase student achievement. We have for summer school for about 5.5 weeks in the elementary school. It's remediation only for students starting at the end of their kindergarten year in reading and math, and it's made a big difference for those students as they transition into the next grade. Next one, please. At the middle schools, one of the things we've started with our stimulus funding that we are building into our budget next year is extensive and intensive training for our middle school principals from the Center for Educational Leadership at the University of Washington. They have really focused intensely on how to improve the quality of the instruction in the classroom. They've met collaboratively, they've done classroom observations and then debriefing together and with teachers to really look at the research on how to improve instruction. We're hoping that this will be able to continue into the future, but we do have it built into next year's budget at this point in time. Another thing we're very excited about that was also started with the stimulus funding that we have put back into the budget for next year are our career guides. One of the things we know in reviewing the state's career technical education plan was the need to start earlier with our young people to help them really think about the future and what kinds of careers they're interested in. What are their interests? How can we make classroom learning more relevant to these interests? We give them the Explore assessment, which is the ACT middle school assessment. We're trying to help them put together a plan with their career guide. So if a student, for instance, is interested in tourism, they may be introduced to travel and hospitality fields, which could include positions from like hotel manager, tour director. Another one who loves CSI programs on TV might really understand that chemistry classes are critical if they want to be part of a forensics team and study criminology, if you will. So I think what we're trying to do is take their passion and their interest, make it more relevant, and help them understand that the courses they take will prepare them for lots of different career fields. And we're also trying to do some things with our summer school, our summer camps, and after-school programs to help them explore these different options. We also have a middle school summer school in reading and math, which is focused on remediation and has been very successful for the last few years. Next slide, please. In high school, our most targeted programs, and this is where we've spent a great deal of our funding, really looking at what we can do that's going to target students who are floundering, whether it's for attendance, whether it's missing credits, whether it's just trying to re-engage them, if you will. So we've implemented some specific programs and intentionally addressed the programs' problems associated with them. We've hired graduation support coordinators for each of the comprehensive high schools, and they've employed specific strategies to get to know the students, really try and figure out why they're not attending school, if that's the issue, what's getting in the way of their achievement and behavior. They're really building an individual plan, if you will, to help them keep on track to graduate. We've also increased our career and technology classes at all of our high schools, and we've got a bond on the ballot actually tomorrow to expand and renovate some of our classrooms so that they'll be more appropriate for our career and technical education clusters as students progress through. We know that's going to engage more students. We know that's more relevant to what they are interested in, and we also want them to be able to take those classes. Hopefully, we can work through getting the academic credit in math and science and language arts for those classes. Over 5,000 students attended summer school last summer. We had an extended school year for some who failed a class and have a chance to recover that credit by attending an intensive class all day for 9 days at the end of the school year. We had summer school sessions that went June and July. Last summer, we were able to offer remediation as well, taking credit for the first time. This year, because of funding shortfalls, we are having to cut back, so we will have a remediation-only summer school in one session in June, another in July. But we also will offer online summer school for those students who want to take a class for either original course attempt or to take a class to make up from a grade that they want to improve. But those will be all online because of the budget situation. Our online learning opportunities have provided some real flexibility for students who register throughout the year as they come in different times of the year. Also, if they need to work in an alternative location, and some of them really do better completing work as self-paced. We're also going to be offering to other school districts next year some of our online accredited courses that might be able to help some districts with students paying a slight fee to meet the requirements of the performance scholarship. Next slide, please. As you probably know, along with our 91 languages, we have a number of our students coming in who are not literate in their own language because they've come over from immigrant and refugee camps, from overseas. They've had interrupted education if they've been to school at all. And we're noticing that by establishing our newcomer center about 10 years ago, we're really focusing on kids in grades 7 through 12 who really need to learn some core academic English language and then that assists them in their language arts and social studies to begin with, while also receiving differentiated instruction to meet their different language levels. We move them out of their home school for half of the day, and we work really intensively with them. They requested to have a third session was just specific to math skills because many of them like math very much. They do well at math, but there's language barrier because so much math has language requirements as part of it, not just computation. So one of the things we've noticed is because it's a welcoming place where students feel safe, they're willing to take risks as they're learning English. We're also connecting them with an English as second language counselor who looks at their academic history and works with their homeschools to make sure the students are on track to graduate. We've spent a lot of time teaching parents English also in the evenings and on the weekends, and we have found that to be very successful as a way to help parents understand that in the United States and Alaska that they're welcome as partners in our schools. And this is very different than some of them have had experience in their countries, especially the mothers, where so many of them never got an education. So we're seeing that our newcomer center has been a very strong component to support these English language learners. We also continue that support in summer school in all levels, and we have a newcomer center for our elementary students that's much more intense because they learn so quickly. The high school students get academic credit for their summer school classes in math, and that the middle school students also, if they're struggling with the math and the language arts, they are also getting that support. Next slide, please. In special education, as you can imagine, because Anchorage is a medical hub, we have quite a large number of special education students. 14% of our student population, as I said before, have special education services available to them. And we range between 700 and 900 students receiving intensive need services. And as I've stated before to your committee, for the first time ever, with the 13 times the base student allocation funding, we have been able to pay the full cost of those intensive need services, which was never possible before the increase. So I really thank the legislature for that support. We continue to add extra counselors to support these students at the comprehensive high school so that we make sure that they're getting transition services to adult life, as well as really trying to focus on what they need and the extra supports to pass that high school graduation qualifying exam. We've also begun training through CARE, which is Collaborative Autism Resources and Education, for some of the schools, because we know that our autism population has frankly exploded. We need to give school staff the tools to provide greater opportunities for students with disabilities in their general classes through an inclusive practice, well, get those supports and services. Because we know many, many of these students are very bright, but they have communication difficulties, and we are trying very hard to keep up with the growing number of autistic students, and also trying to help the teachers know how to provide effective intervention if there are behavior issues involved. The special education teacher, which is provided by the high school education, supports the services for these students in summer school. And finally, next slide, please, excuse me. Title VII Indian Education, we have been very successful with our couple of really neat new grants. One's called Project Kala, which is the Denona Athabasca Work for Boy. That's where we see the largest disparity in both social, academic, and emotional success between Alaska Native boys and any other groups, including Native girls. So what we've developed are collaborative efforts to bring strong academic, social, and cultural foundation for Alaska Native boys, preschool through fifth grade, and their families. We include, but certainly don't limit it to, workshops for parents of preschoolers, training each year for K-5 parents in grade level transition, and a series of four boy-focused family nights featuring family reading, writing, and math games, cultural celebrations, and ways to make positive homeschool connections, professional development for preschool staff, Indian education staff, and ASD teachers and principals has been very effective. And what we found is by bringing the dads in or bringing the male adults in with these boys, we're seeing some connections and results that are hopefully going to pay off in keeping these young men engaged in school. Another demonstration grant that we were successful in getting from the U.S. Department of Education is Project Povitude, Kupik Word for Smart People. It's an online high school success program for 21st century Alaska Native students that offer culturally responsive, rigorous online core courses with unlimited access for students. The connectivity to the internet and equipment is provided here in Anchorage through the netbooks, the mini laptops. We're able to really allow a lot of home use and out-of-school use that's helping these young people. We are also providing extensive support by the teachers and a transition social service coordinator. So there's a real connection and liaison with these students and their families. They also receive face-to-face instruction and support. And we know that that is a critical element in any time we're using online learning, no matter who the students are. But for this particular grant, that connection with a real live teacher is really important. So we just finished year one and we're into year two. We've increased the number of students re-engaging in school, recovering credits, and raising their GPAs. And we've got to keep working on this because we've got to get that graduation right now. So with that, I'll stop. And that's a brief overview of our district. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Any question from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carol, you mentioned that you were having great results with the two programs of the pre-K that were funded through the legislature, but, you know, part of our problem is we haven't seen those. We haven't seen any analysis of those results. So if you do have data and results that you can show of, I know it's, you know, not that many years into the program, but if you have results that you can show, it would be very helpful if you would share those with the committees. And in fact, the legislature, all members of the legislature have the same question of, is this being effective or not? And we didn't have data before us that you're saying is showing great results. So I'd suggest that if you have an opportunity, that it would be good to forward that to us.
Okay, I certainly will try. One of the things that's frustrating, as you can imagine, is because there's no standards-based assessments until the end of third grade, we can find what we've got and send it. I know we've provided information to the Department of Education and Early Development, but we were hoping by the end of this year we would have more data to provide, as well as anecdotal data that's coming from kindergarten teachers and first grade teachers of these students. So I will ask our folks to see what we've got, and I'll be happy to send that down to the committee.
Thank you.
Any other question from committee or Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carol, you mentioned that in middle school you start given what you called explore assessment, and I'm familiar with the, and I'm not saying the title of this right. It's something keys, career keys, or something like that.
Work keys.
Okay. How do those programs compare? I'm sure they're not exactly the same. Can you tell me?
I don't have the details, but the Explore assessment is specific to student strengths and areas of interest that's put out by the ACT office. WorkKeys, I believe, is also developed by ACT, but they're not really related. There's an Explore for middle schools, and there's PLAN, P-L-A-N, for high school students. I think you could, I could ask our assessment person to send me a couple of paragraphs that I could get down to you.
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you. And for the record, I should have mentioned that Representative Pruitt joined us about 10 minutes ago. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I noticed that the 14% of special education students, and I presume that you've been involved with the Consortium for Digital Learning, but we had a great presentation and some data that was showing that just with iPod touches available in grades 3 through 6, and I think the data was from Canby, Oregon, but it showed just a tremendous increase for special education and English language learners were actually catching up to regular students with the use of those basically in free time, not with the appropriate apps. And that anyway, I don't know whether you've been following that or have incorporated that, but it was very interesting for us on those critical group of students to catch them back up. So are you using that?
I heard about the presentation, but I haven't seen it, but I do know that our special education staff and our ed tech staff are looking closely at that, because anything we can do that's going to increase connection and learning English quickly and helping students with disabilities, we're going to explore. But we are beginning to look at that now. But we have a one-to-one laptop initiative through the original Consortium of Digital Learning at one of our middle schools for a couple of our teams. But that's as much as we have had it. Plus, we've had a mini laptop or a netbook used. But we're really interested in seeing what we can develop from what you've just described, because it seems to have great promise.
Representative Seaton, follow up.
Thank you. And you probably have access there in Anchorage for some pilot projects. It wouldn't cost anything, because it turns out when people have their iPhones and they upgrade, the iPhone with just pulling the chip becomes the instrument that could be used. And so you know, maybe with the AT&T who distributes the iPhone, if you could do a recycling of the old iPhones and you could do a comparative project within Anchorage without having to pay for equipment. Anyway, I just thought I'd let you know that that's that gives you the access to that for the free, basically, for the instruments. So I know everybody's
challenged. Well, we don't contact AT&T because we don't purchase those things for our staff. They have to buy them themselves, but I can certainly contact AT&T and see if they've got would like to do something with those.
Yeah, Carol, there's no substitute for good teachers. You know, in my heart of hearts, you know, I'm a teacher. But that iPad demonstration was it totally disrupted the education committee. We all got caught up playing bubble math and everything else, and we had a hard time to get back to order. So I really encourage you do have your special ed and all of your staff take a look at that. Any other question from committee? Okay, Carol, thank you very much, and I look forward to visiting you shortly after session. Thank you for your presentation.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, purpose of meeting today, House Bill 199, State Boarding Schools, third hearing, sponsored by the House Education Committee, will take public testimony. The intent to move it is if the committee wishes. And we'll listen to House Bill 198, Special Education Service Agency. Second hearing, sponsored by the House Education Committee, will take public testimony, and the intent is to move it if the committee wishes. So, HB 199, State Boarding School. We heard this legislation on Wednesday, March 30. We heard from the three school districts and the public. Is there anybody in the room that wants to testify? Elizabeth Noodleman, if you wouldn't come forward, identify yourself, and share your insights.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. For the record, I'm Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance and Facilities for the Department of Education. And I would like to add one thing this morning, and I would might like to just clarify. This program, and as is defined in the statute, this program covers those programs that operate for a full school year. And so I just wanted to go ahead and make sure that that was clear to everyone. In statute, it says, district-operated statewide residential educational program means a public school operated by a school district for students in grades 9 through 12 that provides education, room, board for a full school year without regard to the student's district of residence. So if there was a program that operated less than a full school year, that would not be part of this discussion. And that was just a simple clarification, I believe.
Any questions from committee?
Just questions on the funding.
Go ahead. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks, Elizabeth. I'm just reading over the statute, and it just says that the total amount shouldn't exceed it's 484 in Region 3 in the Interior Region, for instance. Do you remember how those numbers originally were established?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, they were originally established by borrowing the rates from an existing stipend program that the department had that served a few students leaving their village and going to another school. And those stipend rates were borrowed from that other program.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the statute it mentions that the cost should be to cover the expenses of room and board as determined by the department on a regional basis, and it has sort of this cap, and I'm just curious if there are what happens to the schools that aren't going to meet this? If we double the amounts and they don't actually need the money, then the department won't give them that double amount? Is that sort of the way it would work under regulation?
Well, through the chair, I believe that's what the statute is telling us. We have never gotten close to that situation, so quite honestly, we haven't looked at that.
Okay.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have an idea what the actual cost is for housing and feeding the students at the existing program?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, I don't have any data to share with you this morning. We could perhaps come back to you with something. These programs are really fairly early in the development of what they're doing for the state, and so we would really have to look at how you'd bring that information together.
Follow up. Excuse me, Representative Feige. Maybe Eric Gephardt's here from Nenana. Maybe he could answer that question, but go ahead.
These programs have been running for a number of years. It seems that before we go to double the funding that goes to them, we should know what the actual costs are. For if there's one thing I know, the costs will expand to use up the money made available.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. We had an Exhibit F in our packet with the current residential school funding shortfall. Gave Galena and Nenana, and I was wondering whether the department has any conflict with the numbers that were provided. That was I mean, Mr. Chairman, I think when they came to us, they were saying that their costs are approximately three times what the current allowance was, and they were actually asking for that, and this is doubling that cost. And so I'm wondering whether the department has looked at their projected three times cost and whether that was reasonable or was in the realm of reality, or whether you thought that was, shall we say, padded.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we have not reviewed that document, but the department's understood that the cost of these programs has exceeded to a large amount the stipends that they have been receiving. And even when the stipends were first set in these residential programs initially came to the department and the legislature, it was to help, and it's been known that it's not covering the full cost of these programs. They are expensive programs.
Thank you.
Representative Feige, I think that's an excellent question. We do have Craig Colbert, Assistant Superintendent from Galena Online, and we do have Eric Gephardt here, so I mentally they can be preparing to answer your question. Any other questions of Elizabeth? Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric, would you want to come forward and answer that question for us, sir?
For the record, I'm Eric Gephardt, Superintendent of Schools in Nenana, and Sheila, I had emailed sheet to Sheila yesterday or the day before.
You have it there?
Okay. And this was actually in response to the question that I heard Representative Wilson ask of Jim Smith last Wednesday about was asking about cost of fuel, insurance, and things like that. So we would have that there. But if you look at the second page, we have our two. Fiscal year 2010 actual amount, where our deficiency over of revenues over expenditures was $704,000, 868, and then our projected, our budgeted for this amount is over 800,000 in the difference. So again, it's about approximately three times the amount, and we're happy with what the legislature would do, and then certainly that it would be looked at over the interim and next time.
I believe Representative Foggy's question is a good one. You know, we can continue in the whole idea of this bill is just to buy time so we can have a very intelligent conversation about where the whole magnet school, regional school is going. So, right. And we want to help you, but at the same time, it's a good question that where are you getting the money from now? If we didn't give you the money, you would keep going. Where would that money come from? I guess that would be my question.
Right. Well, it comes out of out of foundation funding and local funding from the that we get from the city and any place we can get it. We are committed to it.
Representative Pruitt.
I see here that you've, at least for your budgeted amount here, you've put it over 9 months of the school year. The bill that we have in front of us says that you can take it for not more than 10 months. Would you take, if we had doubled, tripled, whatever we did, how many months of the year would you be accepting this?
Well, currently we get nine months.
Okay, so you would not take the 10th, and that would affect?
If you would give it, I would take it. because again, we can use it, we can need it. We do need it, but at the same time, under the way it is now, it would end up being nine times, and we would take that as well, and we'll make it work.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question from committee? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at some of these numbers here, there's some from year to year. The most of the numbers are relatively flat, but I notice you have some fairly significant increases in wages and salaries, and along with that, employee benefits. I assume you're adding personnel to your program.
We added, I believe, one position for this year, but it was a negotiations year, and there were increases that are part of that, and then employee benefits includes health insurance, which continue to go up significantly every year.
And I did just, Sheila just handed me a note here and mentioned that teachers and staff come in early, before school and after school is over also in preparation and closing up the school year, and that's why the request was for 10 months, realizing the students aren't there, but the
right.
staff needs are still there. It's not like staff goes home the day school's over. Representative Feige, did that answer your question?
If I could follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Did the number of students increase from year to year? I guess I'm wondering why you needed to add an extra person, because it was a significant cost increase.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we have services that under what we currently do that aren't met. We don't have a counselor. We didn't have a certified person at our living center to help with studies and the number of students that we have there. They need the academic support. It's not as simple as I have my two or three or four kids at home. I think it's a large group with a lot of needs and a wide range of needs. So.
I did visit the facility before I came here, and it was pretty bare bones. It was, I think we could have added two, three more staff members, and still wouldn't have been flush. It was there was a lot of people multitasking.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Superintendent Gephardt. Online, I believe we have Craig Culbert, Assistant Superintendent from Galena. Craig, you there?
Yes, this is Craig.
Okay, and you probably heard the question, so why don't you, would you please address those questions if you would, sir?
Yeah, I just have the data that Jim gave me. He's out at the NAPIS conference in Washington, D.C., representing Alaska out there for a couple days. But he told me that the cost for the 255 students that they averaged for the residence hall and food services, that was between Nenana and Galena, was $17,136. And he says of that, the amount paid for the state was about $5,800. So that was covering about 34%. And that was under HB 16. I remember when Murkowski signed that, out in Nenana. I was there. And at that time, they were just trying to give us some support. They knew that we were going to get some support from the delegation in Washington, D.C. There was a question, I think, was Representative Wilson, like, you know, are you getting it from any other sources? How are you backfilling this? Well, we've had a grant for several years, I think it was 4 years total, resiliency grant, through Senator Murkowski's office to help us. And with earmarks, you know, that's going to go away, some of that. There's no doubt about that. I think we have 1 year remaining on the existing one.
And I do remember that you're that right now you're operating with fuel that was given to you by the military. And once that fuel is gone, it's how much a year does that fuel represent?
I would say about $1.1 million is the support we're getting through that fuel. And so between that, if you add that figure with the amount that we're getting through the senator's office out there, Senator Stevens was actually the one that helped us push through the fuel. And that was a five-year transition. So, I mean, it's not like we don't have some time. We've got a few years to get this all figured out. But the clock is ticking, you know. And for us to backfill this, if we look at the deficit total for Galena in one given year, you would be looking at about almost $2 million. About $1.9 million. And so we've got to get the something figured out with the fuel to replace that. And then, obviously, for our boarding home costs, which a lot of the housing and the food, I mean, if you figure in the fuel for the housing.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe I get us off track a little bit there, but we are looking down the road. And again, the purpose of this bill is just to get us some time so we can come up with this sensible solution. Anything else you'd like to add or any question from committee?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is if you want hard figures, you know, for the next, if you can do this over the next 2 years, I know Elizabeth there, and we just work with the department and have figures that the district reports in and that the her department would match and just go through and say, these are all valid figures for those particular facilities that are coded to that facility. So you'd be looking at, you know, audited dollars, you know, that have been looked at by her. The, you know, obviously the dollars are going to be really positive. I mean, you'll see the figures that you're going to want to compare to know that what you're spending is not in excess. And so I think this one, by doubling it now, that's going to do maybe two-thirds of the cost. And so for 2 years, I mean, people should be able to get it out that far. So.
Okay. Any other question from committee? Okay, anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Okay, we'll close public testimony. And let's see, Representative Seaton mentioned that he had a conceptual amendment, and now he has a printed version. If we could all take a look at that. And Representative Seaton, would you want to explain this to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer amendment number one, or move amendment number one. That would be 27LS0594/B.1.
I'll object.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what this is doing is trying to make it so that we have a procedure so that the department has a position where they will go forward and offer or take, when it's reasonable, applications. But by statute, we do not allow them to approve any of those because the way the statute was worded, it said a district that before January 1, 2005 began operating a statewide residential education program. That's in 14-16-200. And, you know, that operates for students grade 9 through 12. So what this does is allows them the statutory flexibility to not only when they determine that they want to offer the proposal of other programs, this would allow them to actually accept a proposal. And so I appreciate the clarification for everyone that the department made this morning that this is for full year programs. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had some partial year programs come forward and all, and this is not addressing those. This is addressing full year programs. But if we've determined that full year programs are beneficial to a significant population of our state, I think that we need to allow the department not only to regulatorily ask for proposals, but to, you know, accept one. And this three limits it, so it's not just, we don't have to worry about an explosion.
Any question from committee? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Are there currently boarding school programs that are before 2005, as the statute relates, and then, or I'm sorry, after 2005, and then between 2011?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I know that there have been some programs that have come to us. Voyage to Excellence is one of them that takes students from around. I know that they are trying to offer more of a residential program, whether that's going to be, you know, they're going to have to meet the qualifications of year-round and also of accepting students without regard to the student's district of residence. Those are the qualifications in the statute. And this is just a provision that if this model is something that we see as necessary, this just allows that to go forward. It's nothing that requires them to approve. It's just that it removes the restriction for if there is an applicant that is meets all the qualifications, that they could approve that.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get to is the dates that are specific in here, the dates that apply to the residential education programs before January 2005 and then after 2011. So if there were a school that started in between those dates, are we excluding them from this?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there's no intent to exclude, but I think that's a good catch. And so if we would want to put that back to the date of January, the begin after July, after January 1st, 2005, that would encompass all of those. And there was no intention to do that.
Okay. That's fine.
I have a question. Right now we have an accurate fiscal note, and if we were, and I'm not opposed to this at all, but I'm very concerned that this bill does get through, that the districts can get funded. And if we were to do this, would that, do you feel that would cause things to be vague enough that it might take away from the chances of this bill actually getting through and the three that we have been identified being funded? Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. This is the department may solicit. They have not solicited. They're going to have to evaluate programs. And I think that would probably have to be in a fiscal note. We could ask the department as to how that would be if they added another. But until they identify that they have so many beds, I don't think so, but that's really a question for the department on their fiscal note, if we could ask them to respond to that.
Elizabeth?
For the record, Elizabeth Nodelman, Director of School Finance and Facilities for the Department of Education. And Chair Dick,
At this time, I believe that a calculation of a fiscal note, if this amendment goes through, would not add any additional dollars. And the department, there wouldn't be a program to fund. This amendment would add language, but I think, as has been stated, it would be up to the department to solicit proposals, and there would be criteria that the department would look for before they opened for more proposals. It would be demand, capacity, public interest, and then if there were proposals, there would be criteria to evaluate those proposals. So I would anticipate a zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to offer that amendment?
Mr.
Chairman, I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment, and that would be to replace on line 6, July 1, 2011, with January 1, 2005.
And hearing no objection, that amendment would pass. Okay. Representative Kawasaki, do you want to remove your objection to the amendment?
Yeah, I'll remove my objection. Thanks.
Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I don't understand how this could have a zero fiscal note. As I read it, after January 1st, 05, you'd be approving them for reimbursement of the costs incurred by the district. So you could approve a program, and then the way we've written this is that so they would be eligible for reimbursement of costs.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This says the department may approve. So it's it goes through a long process for approval. Right now, we have a situation where the department has regulations that they may solicit and look at, but we have in statute that they may not approve. So what this is doing is removing that roadblock, but it's not identifying any beds or any numbers, and so this is not mandatory language, but it's permissive language, and so the department has testified that it would be a long process for them to go through before there would be any approvals, and I think that would come back in a future fiscal note to us to fund.
Okay.
Representative, will you remove your objection then?
I never objected.
I thought you objected. Forgive me. Okay. I thought that was an objection. Okay. I need my flow chart. Brief at ease. Back to order. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Procedurally, I'm not sure where we are. So,
neither am I.
I think we amended number.
Amended number one.
Amendment number one, and I had moved amendment number one, but I'll move amendment number one as amended.
That was what we needed.
Clear on the record.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pruitt.
Objection, just for clarification. So I want to make sure. Basically, the amendment here has nothing to do with the funding aspect. What we're doing is we're adding a new section that's before the funding. essentially the act will need to be probably, the bill will need to be renamed because it's not just an act amending the funding, and that will obviously be taken care of by Lips Legal, but because this is, and that's where I was kind of getting lost in the minutiae of how we didn't have an additional funding going to it. This has nothing to do with the funding. We're just adding a new section that says that three more schools can be approved, correct?
Representative Seaton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the approval of the schools is, I think, within the, there's a statutory restriction right now. This is removing that statutory restriction of the time date, but it's still all relating to funding, but there is just no requirement for funding because they haven't approved any additional schools. So I, you know, that's Ledge Legal, but I don't think it will require retitling, but I'm not sure. Normally, if when Ledge Legal prepares an amendment, if it requires retitling, they do the retitling at the same time.
Representative Pruitt?
Just to clear, and the process itself will normally take several years, or could they find themselves at a position where they've been approved before the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2012, where then it would be a fiscal impact?
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, yeah, the department has testified that there's a long process that they would go soliciting, making sure that there's a requirement. And this is, of course, permissive. And I don't think that the department would ever come forward and say we're going to do something for and approve something for which they have not been allocated funding. Because, you know, if we haven't allocated funding, then it's in the fiscal note. Right. There's not going to be any money for that.
And then just one more follow-up, please.
Follow-up?
So a long-term outlook would be that even if after 2013, June 30th of 2013, we go back to just the way it is currently, because obviously the bill is just doubling this until then, there could be an impact in future years because they would come on and be at the same standing as the three schools that we are currently essentially making this bill for.
Excuse me, Elizabeth, would you want to come help us out here?
For the record, Elizabeth Noodleman, through the chair, if sometime in the future there were residential programs added to this statute, and those were funded through an appropriation from the legislature, then the cost would increase.
Great, thank you. I just like to make sure it's all hashed out. We understand that there are costs associated to this, even if we are not seeing them this year. There are long-term fiscal impacts that we're going to have to deal with by what's in current statute by creating by putting this in here, and I'm never comfortable with this. It doesn't impact us now, but it impacts us in the future, and we don't talk about it. So thank you for clarifying that.
Any other question? My hope is we solve the problem before anybody applies. But any other question from the committee? Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, where are we?
Discussion.
And I remove my objection, by the way.
Yeah, there we are. Okay. Representative Pruitt removes his objection. Any other objection?
On the amendment.
Any other objection on the bill?
Go ahead and put the amendment through because I just removed my objection.
Brief at ease. Back to order. For the record, amendment would be 27-LS0594/B.1 has been accepted. And okay, in regards to the in regard to the bill itself. What's the will of the committee? Representative Kawasaki.
Just, I know this is a timely issue and that this needs to be, it's been impressed upon that this needs to pass the committee today so that we can get on to the other things, but I'm just wanted to let it out there that I'm very uncomfortable with this bill, just the way it's written. I know that there is the need. There's the financial need for these schools. I don't think that we've even gotten to the discussion about where we're even talking about whether boarding schools are the answer in our education process. And so I'm not going to object to having this bill moved out today, but it's just wanted to state on the record that the committee should really take a clearer look at education and whether boarding schools are the appropriate manner. It goes, say, without even the funding issue, purely doubling each of these regions doesn't necessarily account for the particular cost. So I hope finance has that discussion as they deliberate this bill. I think that we definitely need to have a bigger open-ended comment period on whether boarding schools are the answer and how they work into the education system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Oh,
thank you. And Representative Kawasaki, I think we're all in agreement with that. It's a huge issue. And but again, this is just to buy time till we can get there. Okay. Any other comment from committee?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 199, version B, as amended, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Hearing no objection. HB 199, as amended, moves from the committee with individual recommendations and accompanying forthcoming, no, there is no forthcoming, and accompanying fiscal note. Okay, well, brief at ease while we... We're going to deal with House Bill 198, Special Education Service Agency, was scheduled for Wednesday, March 30. We ran out of time. Sheila, if you'd come and just recap HB 198 for us, freshen us up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sheila Peterson, staff to House Education Committee. 198 deals with the Special Education Service Agency. And it is a program that helps very small school districts deal with high needs, high special need children. Their funding has been static for 13 years at $15.72. This bill allows the funding to float as the base student allocation increases. It is 0.4%, which equates to $22.72. And they receive that amount per child that's enrolled in for school in Alaska. The bill also removes the sunset clause. They have been under a sunset review periodically since 1986 when the CESA was established. Removing the sunset clause will allow more flexibility for the organization. They will be able to hire people knowing full well that their existence is in place and that the employment is secure. They'll be able to plan their life on the assurance that they will be there. The sunset reviews have periodically recommended that to the legislature, and now this bill implements that recommendation.
Okay. Any question from committee? Do we have public testimony of any kind?
Yes.
Okay. We have quite a few people available for questions, if anybody has questions. But I guess Patrick Reinhardt, Anchorage, Governor's Councils on Disability and Special Disabilities and Special Ed. Patrick, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
If you'd identify yourself and give your testimony, please.
Good morning, morning, Chairman Dick and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm from Anchorage. I work for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. As you know, the Council oversees a broad range of policy issues aimed at improving the lives of Alaskans with disabilities. And one of our responsibilities is policy oversight of special education in the state. And as such, a subset of our council serves as the Board of Directors of the Special Education Service Agency, SESA. Therefore, we want to officially just go on record again in support of HB 198 and removing the sunset clause for CSET, providing for a more reasonable funding formula. We want to thank you, Representative Dick, for your leadership on this issue and the support of the Education Committee. We've kind of provided with you, our official position, so I won't go into any of that today. However, I do want to again offer our agency as a resource should there be any further questions as you press on forward with this matter. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other public testimony? Public testimony is closed.
We need one more.
Brief at ease.
Can we wait?
Is everybody okay with this?
Are we okay with this one?